Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about Potter's Field Ministry in Whitefish, Livingston's plans for future growth, and reactions to cuts in the biggest school district in Montana. It's Thursday, January 30th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montana Attorney General Tim Fox has picked a running mate from his rival's hometown in the Republican Party primary race for governor. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
Fox taps former State House Representative John Kanoke from Bozeman as his lieutenant governor running mate. Kanoke joins the Fox ticket, pitching a moderate Republican message they say can win the general election.
We must elect the Republican that can win in November. Right.
Montana Republicans see the 2020 election as a chance to put their party in control of the governor's office for the first time in 16 years. The executive office has evaded Republicans despite their majority in the legislature and sweeping every other statewide elected office in 2016. Following the press event to kick off the ticket pairing, Fox and Kanoke announced a fundraiser later that day at the Montana State University football stadium. Fox's cash on hand currently trails primary race rival Congressman Greg Gianforte from Bozeman. Kalispell State Senator Al Olszewski is a distant third in fundraising totals in the Republican gubernatorial primary. Olszewski named fellow Republican state legislator Kenneth Bogner from Miles City his running mate in October. Gianforte has not yet announced a running mate. The primary is June 2nd. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
It may be winter, but fire danger around Montana could spike this weekend when a system of strong winds, dry conditions, and possible record highs for parts of Montana blows in on Saturday. The National Weather Service has issued a high wind watch for Friday through Saturday night for north-central Montana. Strong, gusty winds, warm temperatures, and dry conditions could be the perfect mix for dangerous grassland fires. Gusts up to 90 miles an hour are possible along the Rocky Mountain front. Elsewhere in the area could see southwest winds of 25 to 40 miles an hour with gusts of 50 to 60 miles an hour. Those high winds increase fire danger in the grassland portion of the plains. Gusty winds may blow down limbs, trees, and power lines that could cause local power outages. Travel may be difficult, especially for high-profile vehicles. An assistant basketball coach on the Rocky Boy Indian Reservation in north-central Montana has been charged with sexual abuse of a minor. Kayla DeRoche reports.
The criminal complaint was filed in federal district court in Great Falls last week against Christopher Brown of Box Elder. U.S. Magistrate Judge John T. Johnston oversaw a hearing on the charges Tuesday. According to documents, Brown is in the custody of the court. As detailed in the complaint, 31-year-old Brown allegedly engaged in sexual acts with a female minor at least six times between July 2018 and November 2019, starting when the child was 12 years old. Brown worked as an assistant coach at Stonechild College and also coached basketball at Rocky Boy Middle and High Schools. Court documents say Brown became acquainted with the victim through his work as a coach and relationships with friends. While Brown is not Native American, the female minor is an enrolled member of the Chippewa Cree tribe. Both the FBI and Rocky Boys Police Department investigated the case. The U.S. Attorney's Office declined to comment, and Brown's defense attorney did not respond to Yellowstone Public Radio's request for comment by deadline. If convicted, Brown may be charged with a maximum of 15 years in prison, a $250,000 fine, and 5 years of supervised release. The case will next be presented to a grand jury for an indictment. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Donations to an embattled Whitefish Christian ministry have dropped significantly since former workers alleged its leaders psychologically abused them and coerced them into largely unpaid labor. Potter's Field Ministry is defending itself in several wage claim cases filed by former workers. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
As Potter's Field shut down local pieces of the ministry amid the allegations last summer, it maintained that its donor program funding overseas mission work with kids would live on. And according to the ministry, it has. But Pottersfield says it's receiving half of the $100,000 monthly donations it took in prior to public allegations against the ministry. It's unclear how much the ministry's overseas work has been impacted, but according to a recent letter sent out to donors, it currently serves 14,000 meals monthly and provides other services to children in 7 countries. It says it closed 2 programs in Costa Rica and Uganda since last summer. There's been another change to the program as well. The work being done by overseas churches and funded by donors is no longer being overseen by Pottersfield missionaries on the ground. Pottersfield in-house counsel Sharon DeMiro.
That made it possible for us to have someone who was a stable contact person that could give us accountability for how the funds were being used.
DeMiro says that the ministry is crafting new protocols to safeguard donations from being spent improperly.
But right now, where we're funneling money, we have people we trust.
The ministry also recently announced it no longer intends to fully shut down. DeMiro says its board is still deciding what that reorganization might look like. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Yellowstone National Park officials say a coyote attacked and injured a cross-country skier Tuesday morning. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien has more.
The unidentified 43-year-old woman was bitten by a coyote while skiing in the Canyon Village area. She was treated for puncture wounds and lacerations to her head and arm before being taken to Mammoth Hot Springs and eventually transported to another medical facility. Her condition wasn't immediately available. Park staff temporarily closed Yellowstone's Grand Loop Road near the South Rim Drive, then positively identified and killed the coyote. The animal is now being tested for rabies. Park wildlife biologist Doug Smith says the young coyote was probably starving because it had porcupine quills in its lower jaw and inside its mouth. Coyote attacks on humans are rare, but known to happen. One attacked an Ohio police officer last week who had stopped to help a stranded motorist. Police shot and killed that animal. Also last week, a New Hampshire man strangled a coyote to death with his bare hands after it attacked his toddler son. That coyote later tested positive for rabies. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
As Livingston grows, residents are trying to figure out if the community should focus on maintaining a small town feel, capturing more tourists on their way to Yellowstone National Park, or providing cheap housing for Bozeman. Rachel Kramer reports.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Did you sign in?
Yeah, just go in.
Over 50 people take turns mingling around tables where photos of historic signs from downtown and landscaping with native plants have been taped to big sheets of paper. They're at the Park County Complex in Livingston for the first public meeting about the new growth policy plan. They put stickers next to images of things they like and write comments like no and definitely not beside photos of strip malls and large parking lots. Sarah Stans grew up in Livingston, lived abroad for a while, and then returned to her hometown as younger people started moving in. She says it's made Livingston more dynamic.
But on the other hand, what saddens me is that a lot of my friends can't afford to live here anymore.
Median household income in Livingston is lower than the state's overall average, according to American Community Survey estimates and ESRI Business Analyst. For a while, that meant a lower cost of living half an hour away from one of the fastest growing micropolitan cities in the country.
We are Bozeman's affordable housing. You know, it's cheaper to buy a house here and pay a mortgage than it is to rent in Bozeman.
Stans and many of the other attendees at the meeting Tuesday say Livingston's biggest challenge is trying to figure out how to maintain the town's character and support its current residents while also planning for growth.
All right, everybody, thanks for coming tonight. We'll go ahead and get started with the presentation part.
City Manager Michael Carduce says this stage of process is an opportunity for the community to help shape the future of Livingston 10, 20, even 50 years down the road.
How we want to grow, the areas that we're interested in, transportation, housing, economic development.
While Livingston updated its growth policy plan in 2017, Carduce says the last comprehensive assessment was over a decade ago. He says the city is paying Burton Planning Services and Applied Communications around $60,000 to do research and bring in new ideas. After the presentation about the purpose and next steps for the growth plan, people in the audience share what they'd like to be included. Daniela Love is a caretaker for seniors and a mother of 2 young kids. She says Livingston needs more activities and indoor community spaces for locals.
We have a high rate of youth suicides, mm-hmm. and that needs to be dramatically assessed. And we really need to focus on the youth in this community with the growth.
Other people agree, saying Livingston would benefit from an indoor pool or a renovated civic center and more mental health services. Jim Berg spent his life as a builder and home designer. He says revitalizing downtown and bringing back all the small independent shops would help foster face-to-face relationships and provide basic services for people.
You can't even buy a pair of underwear in this town, literally, since Shopko left town. So our retail has been decimated. And there are reasons for that, but it seems to me if we're thinking long-term, we ought to make an effort to regain some of that.
Berg says Livingston also needs higher-paying year-round jobs to keep up with the rising cost of living. He and several other people say the town would benefit from more manufacturing jobs. But others say Livingston should focus on catering to tourists. Jeffrey Galley says service industry jobs can provide good incomes. He's in the process of opening an Italian restaurant in downtown Livingston.
I think we have an exploding market in Bozeman that is looking for new opportunities to reach out, and I think Livingston is a perfect place for them to come for date night, for our summer activities.
Like other communities outside popular destinations in Montana, Livingston is trying to figure out how to grapple with shifting economic drivers and how that affects locals. The city of Livingston will finalize and adopt the growth policy plan in September. People have until January 31st to respond to a community survey, which is available online. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
The largest school district in Montana plans to cut 40 full-time positions to make up for an over $4 million budget deficit. Many Billings community members spoke at the school board meeting this week to vehemently oppose reductions in library, gifted and talented, elementary interventionists, and music programs. Over 100 people reacted to the proposed cuts at the Lincoln Center boardroom in downtown Billings Monday night.
Thank you again for your time and your dedication to our kids. Not to be overly melodramatic, but I hope we are all aware that largely the economic future of Montana really does depend on decisions made within these walls.
My son was a Quest kid. He was one of those socially awkward ones. That program saved him. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Andrea Fuller and Gavin Wolcher joined the many parents, students, and community members who addressed the Board of Trustees and Superintendent Greg Upham in a comment period that lasted over an hour. Upham says the school board meeting on Monday was a listening session for the Board of Trustees.
It's the democratic process in play. You know, it's listening public comment to the concerns by the individuals or groups in the areas that have been identified for reduction, and maybe we learn some things and pick some things up.
Music and the Quest Gifted and Talented program were the main focus of many people's public comment, but Billings Public School District administrators are also recommending cuts aimed at reading and math intervention programs, library programs, general education, support staff, and administrative positions. Other students as young as fourth grade spoke in defense of the Quest and music programs.
It's not just about the academics, which is a big part of it, but it's also about the emotions. It wasn't just learning, we were all connected. The classroom was one big family.
In the third grade, I didn't have very many friends. I was in the principal's office a lot because of the fights I had when people would tease me. When I was in Quest, everyone understood me, no one bullied me, and I didn't feel like the outlier anymore.
It's helped me so much during hard times and during the goodest times. That's not a word.
That was Kate Sparks, James Sperlin, and Kirsten Kaur, all middle school students. Sperlin emailed his fellow Quest students to let them know about the proposed cuts and encourage them to come speak at the meeting. Sperlin's sister Alicia spoke in support of the fifth grade band and orchestra program she says she's been looking forward to for years.
Cutting the music program made me really sad. I'm in fourth grade, and I really want the chance to be able to pick my own instrument and learn all the notes, because learning notes isn't just, it's like a new language.
Elena Bell is one of Josh Sperlin's Quest classmates and said after the meeting,
"The meeting made me feel frustrated, but it feels good to know that you can speak and fight for what's right in the community and kind of help future generations, I guess."
Courtney Hicks, a high school senior, had a stark view of the cuts and the public comment of young students.
"It's very cute to watch younger children come and campaign for their education. That's heartbreaking to watch these young children be fearful for their education."
Senior at Billings Senior High School, Emily Cheddar started playing the cello in fifth grade orchestra class, one of the programs to be cut. Cheddar spoke with YPR News at a coffee shop a few days before she gave public comment during the school board meeting.
"Just from what I've researched about it, it seems that a lot of the orchestra students or kids that do music early in their school careers are a lot more successful going on. Like, I don't think I'd be where I'm at taking 5 AP classes and in the running for honor scholarships at U of M if it weren't for the orchestra program."
While most spoke solely in opposition to the cuts, some, like Stacy Pinnell, said there are opportunities to improve the programs while working within the cuts.
"I would like to propose people to be creative, and so far, the music educators here in town have come together, they've unified, they've really been quite strategic in getting ahead of this, and so if you haven't heard some of their ideas, they're fantastic."
One idea from music teachers involves making sixth grade music an everyday class, which would result in 50 more instruction hours than the current music program. Ultimately, the Board of Trustees and community members say they will look to the state legislature to make changes to public school funding. Chairwoman Dr. Greta Moen:
"They're painful cuts, and it's because we don't have the financial support from the state legislature to educate our students as we want to educate them."
The majority of reductions are slated to take place during the next school year. Superintendent Upham said a more finalized version of the proposed cuts will be released mid-February. For YPR News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning. It'll be my birthday.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.